Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. We're interviewing our next mayor, a conservative Christian Republican candidate, Al Ferrero. Al is running for the position of mayor for our city, and we've been dialoguing about some of the issues that we see taking place in our city, what's happening on a national basis. And we had asked the question just before the news break. Al, that question was, what do we do to get enough law enforcement police officers on the street? Let me set a little predicate before you respond to that. As you know, we have a number in our family that's with JSO. We've got one of our 4 sons that recently retired from JSO. And I'll give you one of his statements that will give an illustration. When he first went on the force, he said, "Dad, I believe that I can make a difference in our city." After about 10, 12, 15 years, and he retired after 25, after about 10, 12, 15 years, he said, "Dad, the system's broken, and I don't believe it can be fixed." One of the major problems that police officers find in this city and across the nation is that they will arrest the thugs, they'll arrest the lawbreakers, they'll arrest those that have attempted murder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, put them in jail. The next morning, a liberal judge will hear the case, and by 10, 11, 12 o'clock the next day, they're sprung, as the old saying goes, and they're out on the streets again. What do we do with the recidivism that we see taking place? How do we resolve that? What do we do to get police officers, get people that's willing to put that uniform on and be laughed at, mocked at, demeaned, and shot at, and their families not know if they're coming home that afternoon? What's the answer? Do you have a suggestion as to how that can be resolved? And do you feel that we have enough law enforcement police officers in Jacksonville, or should we have more?
So there's a couple different answers to that. One is, no, we don't have enough police officers for the amount of land that we have. And two, we don't have enough police officers for the amount of people moving in here. You know, just like schools or anything else, when you have a growth like our city does and you have people moving here, we have to keep up with it for the schools, with the roads, and with our police force. Otherwise, it should not be a surprise that we're going to have more people than we have the ability to treat for fire, rescue, or police. So those are a couple things that we need. So the answer is no, we don't have enough police officers. So how do we retain? So it's not just how do we bring police officers on, how do we retain police officers that we have that are good? Because we spend a lot of money with the city to train these police officers. They end up getting a 401k to where they can move and they can go different places. So you can't blame somebody for moving to better their family, to make more money, to go someplace else. But that does not help our city. So what we need to do is we need to be able to pay our police officers more. And I do believe that we will probably have to get into some type of pension system to where we retain our officers. That's one of the things that we had in the past that kept police officers here in our city, to where we had people fighting to get in to the sheriff's office here. So that probably needs to be looked at as how we can get into doing that. without, but you gotta put that without putting our city in a financial ruin. Last time what ended up happening is we took money out of our police pension and we kept using it on things other than for the pension. And
right.
What ended up happening is that credit card ended up getting out of hand because you never paid back the balance. And you were just making the minimum payment, and it just started escalating and escalating. That's how we got into a police pension problem. A lot of people don't understand how we got into it. That's how we got into it. We ended up messing with something that was supposed to be used for the police, and it got used for a lot of other things. So we really need to look at how are we going to bring in police officers, keep police officers once they sign on, and retain the ones who are here. Because I'm going to tell you, in the next probably 5 to 7 years, we're going to have a lot of police officers who are going to be retired. And we're going to have a lot of new police officers who are coming that we're spending money on for training purposes of keeping them here, to where they're going to go where they're going to be paid more. Because Jacksonville, in most part, you have some small groups that are loud that are making big waves for our police officers. But you think of a city like San Francisco that is under a lot of lawlessness. We can't have that. We can't even let that start to get to that point, because once you get to that point, you're affecting property values, you're affecting people who want to come on with the police, and you're getting residents to where all of a sudden they don't want to invest in our community. So we don't even want to go down that path. So to do that, there's a couple things we have to do that I just mentioned. But we do need police officers. We probably need at least 200 more police officers in our city.
Amen. Al, hold a moment. I believe we have a caller on the line. Give you the question or comment, please. Hello.
Yes, Dr. Youngblood.
Go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and thank you for your contribution. It's immense, tremendous to the community. Always highlighting and bringing things forward. And sometimes I miss your program, and I feel so bad each time I miss it. But this morning, I'm glad I didn't miss it. And I am happy for you bringing on Al. Thank God he has a name that we can manage, Al Ferreira. Happy to have him, or as you introduce him, our next mayor. We're happy for that. We trust the Lord to bring it about. To me, it is a kind of a personal burden or concern that I share as a new resident in Jacksonville. Jacksonville has not been my home over the years. I'm here, and I regard it as my city now. I realize that it is a growing city and possible one with tremendous potential for development and so on. But there's just that negative part for me, the crime. It's not good. And something has got to be done. If, as Hal was saying, if we don't want to get to the status of San Francisco, something has got to be done. And seriously, I hate to sometimes think that possibly Jacksonville is a crime center of Florida. I know crime is bad in Miami and Orlando and so on, but sometimes I get the impression that Jacksonville is up there. As you mentioned early on, I think as Hal, I think, and yourself, you have been saying it. The problem is a breakdown of family, and the main rejecting God. If we can give, and in all of that, our discussion now, I'm always going back to the church. Jacksonville is filled with major, big churches, established churches, and I think the influence is nil. This is the impression that I'm having, that the influence of the church, that should be so important. The church should be so concerned about every form of breakdown of discipline, that they should be in on top of everything, but it's like silence. And if that need to change. I'm from the third world country that I'm from. I watch the same mention of law enforcement. They have got to be respected. I know the days when the police was respected, law enforcement was important, and I think I'm watching it since around in the States. I'm watching this exact trend that I said took place in the third world country that I was in, when law and law enforcement was like targeted by the forces of demonic forces, where it became a crime, as it were, or a suicidal attempt, as it were, to put on a police uniform. It was like making yourself target for crime.
And absolutely. Lily, what you're saying is on target. There's a need to recognize, and I think that's what our next mayor is talking about, Al Ferrero. Al is talking about the fact that we see crime increasing, and his goal is, as mayor, to reduce that, and to do so, we need to have law enforcement. We need to have law enforcement that are trained, law enforcement that we're paying well enough to be incentivized for them to remain in our city and continue. Lily, thank you so much for your call, for your insight on that. Al, let me do a little stretching from the previous question about the law enforcement factor. And I'm saddened to see our sheriff retiring from the city of Jacksonville. Albeit there were some extraneous circumstances surrounding it, and notwithstanding that, but the question that I need to ask is, do you feel that the sudden retirement of our sheriff will have any negative effect on the control of crime in our city?
I was concerned about that. I spoke with Undersheriff Ivy when all this was being talked about, because one of the things I was concerned with is that having the special election coming up in August and November, and then having this another election coming up for the sheriff in March would do exactly that. And I was concerned with, would that be moving around chiefs, assistant chiefs? Would this affect patrols or drug units or any of these other things? By leaving the undersheriff, who has been there from day one to the operations of the city, I think that is probably the absolute best choice that we could make to continue everything moving forward in the direction that it is, with the most continuity, to where there would be the least amount of interruptions, to where I don't think you're going to see any interruptions that are going to happen. So I'm very pleased that Undersheriff Pat Ivey is now going to be the sheriff, and fully support that for those reasons. I think the importance is to not have a disruption of anything that's happening with the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office has a huge, huge land area to watch. And for the amount of men that we have and women in there, they really do a good job, but they need more help.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. We're talking with the conservative Christian Republican candidate, Al Ferrero, that I'm praying will be our next mayor for the city of Jacksonville. So if you'd like to ask any questions, have any dialogue and discussion about his candidacy, please feel free to call 831-0917. Al, let me ask you a question, and I know that you've been right in the thick of it, as the old cliche goes, as a city councilman, talking about discussing and making wise decisions as to the moving forward in our city with the undersheriff now becoming the sheriff, acting sheriff. Let me ask you a question. It's just semantics, perhaps, but I believe it needs to be asked. The undersheriff has been appointed now as acting sheriff. There will be an election in August, I believe it is. It's scheduled for a special election in August to replace the outgoing Mike Williams. And then the sheriff's regular election was scheduled for, was it March of next year?
Correct.
All right. Now, the question is, for a special election, taxpayers spend between $2 and $4 million for the special election. Why not? And I know this is a question that perhaps you've already dealt with, but I don't know the answer. Why not have the undersheriff appointed, and his appointment will be until the next March election for the sheriff, rather than have a special election spending $2 to $4 million of taxpayer monies to do that? What is the rationale behind that?
So that has been a question that's been brought up a lot. The election is going to be held. There's an election that's being held at that time for state representatives right now. So there is already an election. So when the special election is simply that it was not the time for the sheriff. The time would have been in March, but it's not going to be that much more in cost to print up on the ballots because we're already having that election. It's just a special election for the sheriff, but there was already an election happening during that time. So you're not having to spend that amount of money that you're talking about if it was just for the sheriff, because there is a election going on. His name will the names of the people running for sheriff will simply just go on the ballot. So it's not specifically for that. Why not hold it off until March? Because when the vacancy, from my understanding, from when the vacancy happens with the sheriff's office, there would be a vacancy that that the governor can fill until the next election, and that next election could be held on August, and then the runoffs would go into November. So that was already a mechanism that was there. It's not a special election, but the actual vote for the sheriff is a special election because it usually wouldn't be held until March. Did I explain that easy enough for you?
Okay. That's great clarification for me. I don't know about our listeners. Let me remind our listeners, Al, if you'd like to ask Al Ferraro questions about his candidacy for mayor, that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. Perhaps you've got observations or thoughts in relationship to what your city is like and what you feel needs to be done and how you feel that it needs to be done. Al, there's another problem in our city, and I know you're familiar with it. I know you've already been working towards aspects and avenues for the resolution of it. But Jacksonville has increasingly become a haven for homelessness. There are
absolutely
homeless camps in behind subdivisions, behind shopping centers, major problem with that. I know, again, going back to my son's tenure of about 25 years with JSO, he would have many times full teams that would go out and they would try to clean out the homeless camps, only to find 24 hours later, 36 hours later, they were back in place. And I don't know if that's still being accomplished and done. What's causing the rise of homelessness, and what is the answer to it for our city?
So we've got a couple different problems with homelessness. Some of it is that we have veterans that need some help. Some of it is mental illness, and some of it is just people don't want to return back to work, drugs. And that actually had me pass where I'm trying to push this panhandler bill through right now, and I can explain that a little bit. But the homelessness is a problem, and one of the things that I would do as mayor to directly try to affect this is to have a veterans center downtown. And that veterans center would be manned by veterans, because there's a lot of veterans out here who a civilian just can't make the connections with, like a veteran. There's statistically show that veterans can just deal better with veterans. There's an understanding. But we don't have that in our city, and we're supposed to be known as a veteran friendly city. So homeless is broken down in a couple different spots. That's how I would handle the veterans part. As far as handling the mental illness, that's part of the core functions that we have to put in to our core functions that we used to not really think about that much. You used to just bridges, infrastructure, but mental illness and people that are out here on the streets is a problem. When you have people that are in those neighborhoods that you're talking about or behind them and living in them and they have no source of income, they've got to eat. They got to have water. They got to have, and if they have an addiction on top of that, the only way that they can keep surviving is to either go out and panhandle or start going through people's homes or businesses, cars, and things like that. And that will always escalate to something else, or they go through your mail. So that is a huge problem that we've got to deal with. And right now we've got nonprofits in our cities that are getting huge amounts of taxpayer dollars. And part of it is we're spending a lot of money, but we're not seeing results from it. And we need to, whatever we start doing with taxpayer dollars, we need to actually have some types of results or do something different. And that's why I'm talking about doing things that are different, because what we're doing is not working. Part of it is it's growing. We do have people that drop off from other cities in the past. We have documented where people were being dropped off when we had that problem down at Jefferson Street and Union and State. A lot of people were getting dropped off. But we do have a huge problem. And when we start talking about developing downtown and doing some other things in the city, people are not going to come if we have this homeless problem. So it is something that is throughout the city. It's not just in one area. anymore. It's just focused in different areas. So we have to go at this in different ways. And we also have to be able to change what has not been working to not continue it. We got to look for new avenues that would work and try different things, because if we're just simply throwing more money at something that's not working, that's not good for the people who have mental illness, and it's not good for the taxpayers.
Absolutely. And you touched on a bill that you have introduced about panhandling. Let me give a scenario and then see if that intersects with what you're doing at the present time. I've noticed in several areas of the city, Southside areas, Mandarin areas, et cetera, perhaps more than that, where on Fridays and Saturdays, just about each week, you have, I call them panhandlers. They're at the street intersections. They are not just standing on the sidewalk. They're meandering through the traffic, tapping on the windows with signs up of all kinds of programs they're supposed to be supporting, with buckets asking for donations and for money. That is a major traffic hazard. That's a major hazard if a person were to stumble and fall in front of a car that's moving. And I believe we already have ordinances on the books that prohibit that, forbid that. But why would those ordinances not be, how would you say, carried out and enforced? And why is this taking place on an increasing basis? And what is the answer?
So part of it is the enforcement. Being able to enforce it. Now, what people don't maybe understand is that people have the First Amendment right to be able to hold the sign. That is their public grounds. They can hold up a sign. Politicians do it all the time. If this is not pushed against the fire department or children who are trying to raise money for sports games, this is not what this is about. What this bill was about was keeping exactly what you said. It was to keep people from reaching into cars and ripping the ring off of an older woman's hand. This was to keep people from pulling at door handles. This was keeping them from blocking the view as somebody's trying to make a turn, or blocking in front of their car, or walking in the street, or bringing children out there, or having animals that their paws are roasting on the hot asphalt out there. That's what this bill is about, is to keep people from being able to use that First Amendment in a way to where they're harassing or perhaps getting some law-abiding citizens on their way to work or school into an accident and then simply just walking away. Yes. And it's not their problem. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole purpose of this bill, and that we're working to try to make it's one, enforceable, and that it works for the community. It, like I said, it's not to try to keep, a football team from being able to raise money or something. It's for the safety of the community. Because, like I said, these folks, if they are desperate or they're mentally ill or all these other things, they certainly have their First Amendment right, but they don't have the right to go ahead and cause an accident or put a law-abiding citizen in a situation to where they're in an accident or possibly could run over somebody else.
Absolutely. Al, we've got several minutes left in the broadcast. Two or three very pertinent questions that I would like for us to address. The first one being, the primary one that I'd like for people to understand, how can they reach you? How can people assist you in this campaign? How can people, our listeners, reach out, lock arms with you, and make sure that you are placed in the position of leadership in our city? Give our listeners how they can reach you, your website, the contact number, and how they can make a contribution, how they can assist you in this campaign.
Well, there's two ways. If you're a techie, you can go on and do it on the internet at alferreroformayor.com, or you can mail a check if that's your way. It's to P.O. Box 550506, Jacksonville, Florida, 32225. The other thing that you could do by going to our website is to see about meet and greets, to see about either fundraisers or just getting people to know us. I am not the establishment candidate. I am going to be, just like I was in 2014, a grassroots yep. person. Every single person who runs for office is tied to somebody or something. And mine has been always to the constituents. When I first got elected, I put my name on my shirt so people would be able to come up to me and know who I was and be able to speak to me. I want to go out into the community and do just like we're doing, answering cold questions, answering what people want to talk about. And I need to do this more often. I need to get in different parts of town. So please invite me to come out there and meet with your groups. I don't care if it's 10 people or 100. I need to meet with people, and I do need to raise money to fight this establishment, because the people I serve are going to be the people who are listening in your programs right now.
Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, I highly recommend that. I like the approach that it's the grassroots people's candidate and not what I call the ones that are the major components of running a city, taking about a dozen or two dozen people, and they make all the decisions who gets in office and who doesn't. I think it's time we break that mold and put we the people's choice in office, especially as mayor of our city. So it's Al Ferrero, and we're going to ask him to give that information in just a moment before we close the broadcast. Al, there's a couple of other very, very serious questions. Recently, it comes to our attention again that the LGBTQ Pride walk is going to take place on the Acosta Bridge. And we have the Jacksonville Transportation Authority and the Florida Transportation Department of Transportation that apparently have embraced a certain particular element of society that they're going to highlight and support with taxpayers' money. What is your position on that? What can we the people do that stand against it? I've never had Acosta Bridge opened up for us to wave flags for Christianity or to have an Easter egg roll or an Easter march or a Christmas celebration on the Acosta Bridge at the cost and expense of taxpayers, but yet we are expected to underwrite that for the police department to support it and protect the people in the march. What is the answer? We've got just a couple of minutes left. What is the answer? What is your position on that, and how should we respond? I've got a number of people that have asked me that question.
Well, as a Christian, I think that what we need to do is do the same thing. We need to be able to go out and do things like this. But I'm not supportive of any type of sexual behavior that has to do with putting it in front of anybody's face. We had the drag queens that were in front of the libraries. I wasn't supportive of that. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, you're just against the LGBTQ community for that. And my answer was, I wouldn't be okay with somebody who was straight in lingerie doing storybook telling in front of our children. You know, we have gotten away from the word of God so much that it has been bent and twisted in so many different directions that people are afraid to just stand up and say what's right and what's wrong.
Absolutely.
And, you know, So I look at this and I say, if this isn't good for the taxpayers, you know, I would not want a woman who is in lingerie or doing this kind of stuff teaching children storybook time that are straight. Why would I be okay with it if they're gay or they're lesbian or transgender or whatever letter you want to put behind it?
Yes.
You know, there's right and there's wrong.
Absolutely.
And this just isn't something part of our society. And we have to stand up and just say when something's right and when it's wrong. We have
Absolutely.
Gotten people getting
Al,
killed.
Al, our time
in
our is sleep. totally dissipated on us. Al, but thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to encourage you to look Al up on his website. Do all we can to lock arms with him and to place him in the mayor's office at election time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on this broadcast. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
Nightly, 9 to 10 for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.